Radio Sweden, Monday. I'm Gabby Katz, here with Bill Schiller at Broadcasting House.
Swedish moderate conservatives end their party conference and okay gay marriages. Protests over an imprisoned Swedish journalist in Eritrea, and Sweden expels Afghan refugees despite growing violence there.
Those were today's news headlines. Also coming up in the program, another crash landing prompts Scandinavian Airlines to permanently ground its Dash 8 Q400 fleet at a cost of $62 million. Sweden returns the plundered remains of Australian Aborigines to their homeland, and we look back at the third International Poetry Festival. That's coming up, so don't go away. The Radio Sweden team would really like you to stay. Bill, I think I'm a little bit better at blank verse. You better bring us the news quickly.
The Swedish conservative moderate Prime Minister Fredrik Reinfeldt has ended his party's annual conference this week by declaring that the party will continue to renew policies and favor pensioners, immigrants, healthcare and the environment, as well as support gay marriages. The party congress approved the leadership's recommendation that church marriages include homosexual couples. This leaves only one party in parliament opposed to this now, the government coalition partner, the Christian Democrats. Reinfeldt says he'll now talk to his coalition partner in hopes of avoiding a split. The Congress also voted in favor of plans to make major cuts in military spending, breaking with past policy, and concluding that no changes are necessary in labor laws, a contradiction to earlier demands to make it easier to hire and fire workers. The only defeat for the party leadership was a rejection of a proposal to sell the state gambling monopoly. Swedish refugee advisers are sharply critical of the migration authorities here for expelling refugees from Afghanistan, despite the worsening security situation there and continuing deaths from suicide bombers. The critics claim that two Afghani refugees, whose appeals for asylum have been rejected, are now being held in detention, awaiting expulsion orders, and that four Afghanis have been forcibly expelled from Sweden during the last 2 months. The advisers demand that Swedish authorities make an internal decision that no cases among the hundreds of Afghanis asking for asylum are to be handed over to the police. Some of them are coming from areas declared by the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees as too dangerous to receive returning refugees. Marking the 43rd birthday of imprisoned Swedish Eritrean journalist Dawit Isaak, Swedish public service and commercial television and radio stations have joined 30 newspaper editors demanding that the Swedish government take more action in the case. The Swedish journalist has been in jail in Eritrea for 2,225 days, accused of anti-government activities by starting a critical and independent newspaper in Eritrea, where he was born. The protesters argue that too much time has passed for quiet diplomacy and that Sweden should get the backing of the European Union in this case. The Swedish government denies that it's been slow because Isaak is not a native-born Swede and also claims that cutting off Swedish humanitarian aid to Eritrea would only be harmful to the population and not hurt the regime. The Swedish labor market minister says he's disappointed that so few immigrants have received jobs under his new work and study program. Only 163 persons have gotten employment through the program, which started in July. It calls for a combination of work and studies of the Swedish language for those who have received residence permits in the last 18 months. The state is to pay half the costs while the employer pays the other half. The minister says it may be an information problem. One of the main aims of the now one-year-old centre-right coalition government has been to provide jobs and take people off welfare. The hoped-for swarm of rich Russians has not crossed the border to shop at the new giant IKEA department store in Haparanda, Tornio, in the far north of Sweden along the Finnish border. However, Swedes and Finns have come in expected numbers to the one-year-old furniture and household goods store. Local authorities say the hoped-for new jobs have also materialized, and other companies and stores flocking to the area have brought an economic boom to the whole region, long known for losing workers to Stockholm and Helsinki in the far south. And in the rain-soaked Swedish soccer football championships, Gothenburg beat Trelleborg 2-0 to win gold. And weather-wise, it's a rainy day here in Stockholm and in much of Sweden. Sunshine on the Baltic island of Gotland and in the west coast region surrounding Gothenburg. The temperature here at noon, 9 degrees Celsius. The same in Malmö in the far south. In the far north, between 2 and 8 degrees. The sun rose here in Stockholm this morning at 7 Sunset at 4 minutes after 4 p.m.
Roses are red, violets are blue. We still have the poetry festival for you. That and more to come. I promise I won't do any more rhyming in today's program. If you're just joining us, this is Radio Sweden's Monday edition. Three times unlucky was the catchphrase when yet another Scandinavian Airlines Dash 8 turboprop plane crash-landed this weekend. After a series of incidents caused by landing gear malfunctions, the Bombardier plane has now been grounded permanently. Azaria Kiros has the story.
No one was hurt in any of the crash landings except Scandinavian Airlines' reputation. Pulling the Bombardier Dash 8 planes from the runway will cost SAS up to $62 million for the rest of the year. Newspaper Dagens Nyheter wrote that it was a daring but necessary decision. On Monday alone, over 60 flights were cancelled. The crash that was one too many occurred on Saturday in Copenhagen, and SAS Denmark is said to be the division hit hardest by the decision to ground the planes. 55 departures have been cancelled from the Danish hub, compared to 8 flights from Sweden. The grounded turboprop planes are to be replaced both by other SAS aircraft and leased planes. But SAS maintains that the cost is nothing compared to keeping its brand name intact. According to news agency Associated Press, SAS Deputy Chief Executive Officer Jon Dunholm said that SAS flight operations have always enjoyed an excellent reputation and there is a risk that use of the Dash 8 Q400 could eventually damage the SAS brand. But has SAS been damaged? According to an on-the-spot poll carried out by Swedish television news, customer opinion varied. There were those who looked to SAS with unchanged trust and with confidence that SAS would sort the problem out. The makers of the plane, Canada's Bombardier, have released a statement saying they were disappointed with SAS' decision and maintain that the Dash planes are reliable.
Stockholm's Museum of Ethnography has returned the bones of Australian Aborigines from graves plundered by a Swedish expedition almost 100 years ago. George Wood was at a special day hosted by the museum as today's curators tried to make amends for a past search for the missing link.
In the early 20th century, a Swedish anthropological expedition to Western Australia illegally plundered a number of Aborigine graves. According to reports, in some cases the burials were so recent, the Swedes actually cut the skin off to expose the skeletons. These were shipped back to this country, supposedly for research, a reflection of the race biology of the time. The scientists wanted to see if the Aborigines were the missing link between Neanderthals and modern humans. That kind of thinking has been rejected for many years now. Most of the Aborigine remains have been stored away from view at Stockholm's Museum of Ethnography, until Swedish anthropologist Claes Hallgren wrote a book about the subject. Australia discovered the illegal plundering and demanded the return of the remains. Bones from 15 individuals were returned in 2004, and now the final remains from at least 10 more individuals have been returned. Before the official ceremony, I asked the head of the Ethnographic Museum, Professor Anders Björklund, about the origin of the Aborigine remains.
They came from Kimberley, Australia, and they was brought here by a Swedish research team in 1910-11. And they ended up in this museum some decade later on.
Last year you returned a totem pole,
yeah,
to the Native,
right,
Americans in British Columbia.
Yeah.
Are there more things that are going to be going back to other places? Do you have more remains?
We have 850 persons down here in the stores, but I don't know if any of these will be returned, actually, because there are no demands right now. And I don't know for sure if there are going to be that many repatriation questions. I haven't anyone on my table right now, anyway.
The day included a seminar in the repatriation of remains, and the participation of the Minister of Culture and the Australian Ambassador. Among the Australian delegation who were here to receive, pack up, and return the remains was Aborigine Ishmael Croft.
I come from Fitzroy Crossing in Western Australia. I'm here part of the Australian government delegation group to visit a number of countries to talk on behalf and try getting Australian remains back to their country where they belong.
Why is it important to return these remains from Sweden, where they've been for so many decades, back to Australia?
Well, as part of the Indigenous remains, we have a 40 to 60,000 year tradition, and that's our culture that we practice. And the remains that have been taken have been like stolen graves, and the settlers that have been when they've been taking them, I guess. They thought that they were neglected, which they weren't. They were there part of our ceremonial practices and a part of our 40,000-year tradition and culture. So it is really important for them, for the remains to come back. We believe in our culture that when a certain person passes on, their spirit and soul goes back onto their traditional land, their country where they... where they're sort of set free. And regarding the bones, they turn into dust and sand, and which are part of the ground. The ground is part of our culture, and it's really significant for the remains to come back to our people and to the place where they belong.
How has the process been getting these remains back from Sweden? Has it been hard or easy?
I guess the Sweden government, they've been really helpful working in collaboration with the Australian government and the Australian Indigenous people in terms of getting remains back. And we'd like to use Sweden as an example to other countries that have our remains and say this is part of a reconciliation process. Now that our people don't have a negative view on Sweden because they've taken our remains, they sort of have a positive view on the Sweden government. So we would like to use this example to persuade other countries that have our remains.
Australian Aborigine Ishmael Croft. Last year, when Sweden returned an ancient totem pole to the Haida Native Americans of British Columbia, the Museum of Ethnography received in return a new totem pole carved by the tribe. This time, in connection with the return of the remains of Australian Aborigines, the museum received new paintings for its exhibition of Aborigine art.
Radio Sweden now offers MP3 downloads and podcast feeds for our weekday programs. Downloading a podcast allows you to listen to Radio Sweden when it's convenient for you. Just load the podcast onto your portable MP3 player and take it away from your computer. You can subscribe using the podcast feeds on our website at www.radiosweden.org. That's www.radiosweden.org. Or via podcast services on the internet. For more information on how to subscribe directly, click on the link RSS and podcast on our homepage.
You've put up with my lousy rhyming, but I have to say it was all inspired by the Third International Poetry Festival. They're much better at it than me, and a literary publication based in Stockholm, Moscow, and New York did the honors at the poem-packed event. Our own cultural editor, Bill Schiller, who is also better at poetry than myself, met some of the visiting poets and the magazine's editor, an ex-Soviet citizen now at home here in Sweden.
Maybe you too sometimes fantasize that God resembles your most difficult teacher, the one who never gave you the highest mark.
My name is Alexander Dereev, and I'm the editor and publisher of the online and in-print journal of poetry, translation and art, Ars Interpres, originated in Stockholm since 2003.
Born in Russia.
Yes, well, in the former Soviet Union, better to say.
Organizing an international poetry festival. What happened this year?
Well, this year festival was a short one. This one has brought together many poets from Sweden, Singapore and other countries for a series of literary events. The poets who performed there gave talks and launched a new issue of Ars Interpres. Also Peter Lindgren, Lasse Söderberg, Deepak Mazumdar, Catalanian poet Anthony Albalat and Danish Ulrik Gernes. Also, a very fine poet from New York, Mario Suska.
What kind of poems now?
All types of poetry, from very dramatic to very humorous poems. And I should say that among the various venues where poetry reading took place during this festival, none was more unusual than pub department store.
And people there shopping, buying clothes, and watching the poets.
And now listen to the poets.
How did they react?
Very well. Even some was shocked.
But somewhere under minus 120, ice gains viscosity, return to liquid, start to melt again.
My name is Heng Siok Tien. I'm from Singapore.
Bringing what kind of poems now to this festival? What did you read for the audience?
All right, because I feel very strongly about being a Chinese, brought up in a very Chinese environment, but having to learn English. So the poems that I read earlier were about the tension between a Chinese who have to learn English in order to use it for economic reasons.
And you're a teacher as well.
Yes, I try very hard. Yes, I'm a teacher by profession.
Yeah. What kind of teacher of what subject?
I teach both English language and English literature, yeah.
How does that go together, being a poet and being a teacher? Do they complement each other or difficult or what?
Yeah. No, they do complement each other because I have to explain sometimes certain ideas and feelings in English literature using the language. So, and most of the English literature that we studied is mainly British literature, sometimes American literature. So essentially literature in English. So it's complementary, that's for sure.
How do you think the Swedish audience responded to your poetry?
Well, after I read, there was she came up to me and said she felt that she could identify with a bit of what I was sharing because she's actually Belarusian and she's come to live in Sweden, you know. So she did say that she could identify a little with it. I think most people nowadays, because of the modern world, feel that they are living in two worlds. Could be the world that they're born in, and then for various reasons, they have gone out to work, they have married other people. So I think all of us now inhabit or live in more than one world. It's no longer like the village world of our parents or our grandparents. So it is something very universal, I think. And even if you're not two different worlds, always your own private world and the outer world. So we always are shuffling between two worlds, I think.
Imagine the wilderness in rainforest humidity instead of barren moors. Is it worse there as a poor, bad, flocked animal with a pilgrim?
Mario Sasko from New York and possibly Croatia as well.
Reading what kind of poems now at this international festival?
Well, poems that basically have one topical theme, so to speak, and it's the war, because I managed to survive the Balkans, so most of the poems hinge on that.
And one poem about a father looking for his son on the battlefield.
Yes, that's the poem, and it had nothing to do with me. It's completely imaginary, but what I like to see is whether an imaginary thing can be equally real and the other way around.
Recognizing things that his son might have had by someone who may have taken them or might be a figure of evil on the battlefield or what?
That's exactly the point. You know, you have that protagonist who is basically almost deranged looking for his son, and then whether he imagines that the things that a soldier has that he meets are his or not, you know, is the whole gist of the poem.
And why is a Croatian now living in New York City?
Well, I lived half of my life in the States, so that was the only place I could go to.
How does it feel coming to this international poetry festival in Stockholm?
Wonderful. I'm here for the first time, and I'm finally managing to see Alexander, and I appreciate whatever he has done.
He's been publishing some of your poems in his magazine.
Yes, yes, and that's how we got to know each other. what I like is that he doesn't publish only, you know, living authors, so to speak, but you see Pushkin, you see, you know, other writers that definitely are still relevant.
The teacher said God would never be able to tell us whether he created a chicken or an egg first. Do you know?
I'm Yao Kai Chai and I'm from Singapore.
Poetry now, about what? What is the subject?
Poetry, I write about experimental poetry and I write about intermedia like movies, music, television and how they convert in this current world.
What kind of reaction are you getting now from the audience here in Stockholm?
I think the audience in Stockholm is very respectful and they're very eager to hear what you had to say. And from what I could see, they do relate to some of the references like music and movies that I refer to, like Ingmar Bergman, which I think is nice.
What does it mean to you to be participating in this international poetry festival in Stockholm?
It's very revealing to see how poets from different worlds talk and, you know, exchange ideas. And I really, really appreciate the opportunity given by the organizers at the Writers' Union.
We heard some people from Croatia, some people from Belarus.
Mm-hmm.
Comparison, poetry similar, international, or totally different from country to country?
There are similarities in the way people share about the feelings about family, about grandmother and things. But there are also differences which I'm very attracted to, like the way people react to different things, like different languages, the way they pronounce the words are different. And I think that's part of the musicality of poetry.
A poet in Singapore, can you make a living? Can you survive? Do you have to work something else? How difficult is it to be a poet in Singapore?
A poet in Singapore, it's quite embarrassing. You can't be a full-time poet. You have to have a whole daytime job. For myself, I'm a journalist, so being a poet is like an escape route to do what you like to do after office hours. But gradually, you have a growing scene of poets who are writing, and they are getting the respect as well and the publicity. So I think it's definitely growing.
Are there some subjects that are taboo? I understand it can be very difficult sometimes to get your message across in a very well-organized and maybe dominant Singapore. What's taboo? How far can you go?
Taboo is a very good area of why poetry can be used as a channel. If you can't discuss gender issues or politics or gay or, you know, race and everything. But poetry is where you can discuss this through metaphors and through different ways of figurative language. So I think poetry is a perfect channel to discuss all these potentially controversial issues. And that's why we write. We talk about these issues through our poetry when we can't talk about in our main media.
Without getting into trouble from censors or authorities to say, what kind of poem is that? Why are you talking about that subject?
I think that's part and parcel of society gradually opening up and realizing that there are people with different sexual orientation or racial and politics and everything. And that's why you have that. And the more you push, the better the society becomes. And I think we are part of the process. And one day or later, we can become like Sweden, as open as ever.
A boy from the neighborhood tells you that they are dead. He says, look, even the Beatles die. Never mind your parents. Besides, who knew them except you?
I'm Valjina Mort from Belarus.
And what kind of poems did you read tonight?
Well, I read my poems from my book of poetry translated into Swedish. It's called Torarnas fabrik, Factory of Tears.
And this was a very ironic poem about everything going badly in society, but where people are in pain and crying, it's going very well. Why did you do this?
Well, in Belarus, after the end of every year, the government publishes all kinds of annual reports from different factories and industry in general so that we know how many tractors we produce and how many nightgowns. So this is what I was making fun of. I invented this factory of tears that is working really hard, and it's a heroic factory, and I'm a worker there because I'm a crybaby.
So in this Eastern European dictatorship, pain and agony and tears, production is very, very good, but everything else is going down the drain.
Well, not everything else is going down the drain, but for sure that pain and tears are number one.
In school, I surpassed even my teacher, declaiming about the exploitation of the masses, the corruption of the rich who could afford caviar and frog's legs.
My name is Tim Liade, and I'm from Bath in England. I teach at Bath Spa University. In 2001, I taught for 1 year in a young offenders prison in England, And during the course of that year, I wrote hundreds and hundreds of poems, which were distilled into a book of poems, of 38 poems, called The Blood Choir. So I'll almost exclusively be reading from that book.
Now, are these about young offenders, about young criminals?
Yes, very much so. They're about individual young offenders, but they're also about me. They're also about my reaction to working in a prison, and I explore the nature of the cultural distance between me and them in lots of poems.
And what was your reaction? Glad to be there? Frightened to be there? Sorry to be there?
I think the primary emotion would have been fear, and I certainly didn't teach them anything. But I like to think that I was able to build up some degree of trust with individuals, and they didn't come to regard me as someone who was part of the larger conspiracy.
Poems filled with gloom and desperation, or with hope and joy, or what?
A mix of all those things, I hope. I would imagine that they're quite dark, but, I mean, it's been incredibly well-reviewed in Britain, and I think what all the reviews have said repeatedly is that my poems show the possibility of eking out degrees of freedom even when you're inside the prison. So I guess that's hopeful.
How important is it for you to come to a festival here in Stockholm?
Very, very important. I mean, I've been in touch with Alexander now for, well, about 2 years, and it's very good to meet him, and it's an exciting city, and the opportunity to read poems in a new city is always an exciting prospect.
What do you think of the magazine itself, Alexander's publication?
I think it's a beautiful magazine. I think it goes from strength to strength. What I like most about it is the way it maximises the number of poems you can get in one issue. Very unusual. You know, British magazines are too self-consciously tasteful and like to give lots and lots of space, whereas I like the way Alexander just goes poem after poem after poem after poem all the way through.
Because your parents have left, and I'm ashamed to return to you again.
That brings us to the end of today's Monday edition. Our headlines once more: the Swedish moderate conservatives ended their party conference and gave a thumbs up to gay marriages. And Sweden expels Afghan refugees despite growing violence. For those stories and more, do join us online, radiosweden.org. From the English team here at Radio Sweden, thanks for listening, and I'll leave you with a little schlager music. They did not do well in last year's competition to pick a winner for the Eurovision Song Contest, but The Attic and Therese, well, they could be described as favorites on the music scene. I'm Gabby Katz. Goodbye for now. Don't you believe? Yeah.